You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, December 1st, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in America's heartland, downtown Brooklyn, New York. On the program today, protests continue. The lack of a trial for the killer of an 18-year-old unarmed Michael Brown in Ferguson, St. Louis. Meanwhile, police union upset in St. Louis that a couple of football players showed some solidarity with the protesters. Meanwhile, moves in the Senate. Chuck Schumer vying for a leadership position, probably in 2016, claims that Democrats need to have or should have paid more attention to middle-class concerns. It's unclear what the senator from Wall Street had in mind, but he's also helped Senator Mark Warner get a leadership position, and that's not terribly encouraging. Meanwhile, Black Friday fizzles. Too many people signing up to become members of the Majority Report. A Republican staffer resigns after showing that she's an a-hole. And probably a little bit, well, I don't know, you'll decide, in her attacks on the president's children. Elizabeth Warren goes after a Wall Street banker who, now that he has cashed out of Wall Street, is hopefully going to go work at Treasury. More on wage stagnation and, sorry, Bush and chains, but your gold is a little bit less valuable than it was before the Swiss government decided not to collect more of it. All that and more on today's program. We'll take your phone calls early if we get some at 646-257-3920. Taking your IMs at Majority FM. I want to remind you that you can get the Majority Report app for iOS or Android. It is totally free. It is the easiest way to listen to the program. The only person I know of who has been unable to figure it out is my mom. Now, to be fair, she doesn't know how to download an app. If she knew how to download an app, she'd be able to operate the app. And Mom, I love you. I know you're listening to the program. She listens to it on the computer. But the app is so much easier, Ma. And you can take it with you to the extent that you have the ability to take it with you. You can get that at majorityapp.com. But yes, if you did if you did avoid shopping on Black Friday and have a couple of extra coins in your pocket, becoming a member of the Majority Report is far more satisfying than going. I have to admit that in general, we practice no shopping on that Black Friday. But I did buy some wood, which I'm going to be hammering in this studio a little bit later. two by fours, actually, but they were not on sale. And it was not at a big box store. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Let's get into, there were obviously, I hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving. Matt is now back from his new tradition of traveling to Peru for Thanksgiving. Is that a new tradition for you?
I guess it's a new tradition. It's the first time I went there, yes.
There you go. Well,
but I guess a tradition will require it being done more than once.
Yes. Well, or you could do it every 5 years or every 10 years. Michael, I assume that you had a good Thanksgiving?
I did.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Now that we've gotten all that out of the way.
That's great. Yeah, it's a good time.
Good.
Went hiking in Vermont.
All right, let's not get too much information involved.
We could talk about menus. We could really go into this.
No, that's not necessary. All right, but one thing that did happen over the
course. I do
want
to hear more about Peru at some point, but go ahead.
All right, well, we can do that after the show.
Okay.
There were protests that basically carried through the weekend and around the country, and certainly in the days leading up to Thanksgiving. On Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, traditionally in this city, we have the Macy's Day Parade. And there were protesters who were basically trying to remind people that, you know, it's a parade is all well and good, but you know, we also have a problem in this country where if you are a black male, you really just don't get to live the life that you would if you were a white male in terms of your relationship in particular, or at least specifically on this occasion, marking when it comes to the police in this country. And there was another horrible story of a 12-year-old in Cleveland who was shot. And we will get to that as well. But meanwhile, in New York on Thursday, there were protesters at the Macy's Day Parade. Here is how PIX 11, PIX is the local, I don't know, I guess that it used to be a UHF channel, but it's a local New York City channel talking about how the parade fortunately goes on.
Unexpected drama today at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, the biggest of its kind, as you know, in the world. Millions line 6th Avenue for the traditional and eye-opening event. And keeping a close eye on everything, lots of NYPD officers. But that did not stop protesters from trying to bring this parade to a screeching halt. They did not succeed, but they did manage to get a little roughed up by police. PIX 11's
I don't know how this thing comes to a screeching halt. If you've ever watched the Macy's Day Parade, it's not like it's going 40 miles an hour. All right, continue.
Mario Diaz joins us now live in Midtown with details on this. What were they protesting, Mario?
Well, Heidi, it was the same message we've been hearing all week long, only it was directed at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade at one point. As you can see, though, right now here on West 37th Street, the police barricades are on the sidewalk, and traffic is now being allowed onto this street. The congestion you see here right now, much different than what we saw here hours ago.
It's all together.
Protesters, along with handcuffs, are not scenes normally associated with the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. But the two were served up this morning, minutes before the first group of floats soared past 6th Avenue and 37th Street. About an hour prior to this garbage container being tipped over and protesters being detained with hand ties, NYPD Commissioner Bill Bratton had this to say about any potential disruptions by Ferguson protesters during the parade.
We'll be prepared for that, and let's hope they're smart enough and courteous enough not to engage in that activity today.
Minutes later, Commissioner Bratton added,
"It's a national event, a historic event. Anybody who wants to seek to interrupt it would be very callous indeed on this very special day."
Shortly after those comments, approximately 50 protesters began to gather around the New York Public Library.
Don't shoot.
Protesting the developments this week in Ferguson, as well as the Eric Garner case on Staten Island, the protesters went on the move.
Dead bodies on the floor. Nothing to be thankful for.
Marching down Fifth Avenue, they made a turn west on 37, intersecting with the parade route, as well as those who had been standing for hours along 6th Avenue. As they crossed 6th Avenue into 37th Street, protesters tried to make a U-turn, but the NYPD prevented any attempts to get back onto 6th. It wasn't long before the standoff turned into agitation, which ultimately led to this. The NYPD took down several protesters who they say were not being cooperative with what was being asked of them and who were trying to make it back onto the parade route. A total of 7 protesters were arrested for disorderly conduct, their Thanksgiving ending in this NYPD prisoner's bus. As for the parade itself, it was never interrupted.
There you go. The parade was never interrupted. Thank God we didn't allow any type of protest or any notion of the reality that millions in this country deal with in any way tarnish the parade of attempting to sell kids cartoon characters.
Also in the video, when the reporter goes, and then this, and you hear like a little bit of like a crash, it's actually a protester slowly tipping over a single garbage can.
That's right. A single garbage can was turned over. And it's unbelievable, the drama, you know, that I'm glad that it got some coverage, but of course it was all about the drama of garbage being tipped over.
Well,
rather than add even one fact to give some context as to why people might protest.
Well, and not only that, I like the whole set for the segment. Is she goes, "What exactly are they protesting?" And he goes, "Well, it's the same thing we've heard all week.
That's
like
right.
It's this whole innocent black men are being gunned down by the police."
It would be nice,
nothing
at the very least,
here.
If they even
articulated.
But all it was as if these sort of like just renegade,
everybody
crazy
knows.
People coming in to, how could you possibly prevent the kids from seeing the Peanuts characters?
That's also
on time.
True. If you don't know if you don't know Ferguson, you could think, well, okay, the same thing I've heard about traffic on the Upper West Side, the same thing I've heard about anything.
It's unbelievable.
Incredible.
Meanwhile, President Obama is holding meetings, and it's really sort of unclear to me exactly what the meetings they're holding at the White House. He has assembled members of his cabinet to discuss federal programs and funding that provide equipment to the state and local enforcement agencies. It's unclear to me whether or not they're saying, hey, how come we are militarizing these police so much? Or whether or not it's, hey, we should be militarizing these police more relative to these protests. President Obama is then scheduled to meet with local national civil rights leaders today, and then a third session among elected officials, law enforcement officials, and community and faith leaders to discuss how communities and law enforcement can work together to build trust to strengthen neighborhoods across the country. So unclear, really, what all of this is about. And I guess we'll wait and see what comes out of these meetings. Meanwhile, a Missouri police union has condemned players from the St. Louis Rams. It was about a half dozen of them who made the hands-up gesture when they came onto the field and introduced onto the field. They did this, obviously, in solidarity with people protesting the killing of Michael Brown. The St. Louis Police Officers Association claimed that the officers found the actions of these members of the St. Louis Ram football team, Tavon Austin, Stedman Bailey, Kenny Britt, Jared Cook, Chris Givens, and Trey Mason, to be, quote, tasteless, offensive, and inflammatory. They're
wah.
No kidding. And demanded that they be disciplined.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable. This was a game, obviously, the St. Louis Rams were playing the Raiders. They won 52-0. My guess is the Rams front office probably will allow them to raise their hands in the air anytime they want to come out of as long as they continue to win. Britt, one of the players, said, "I don't want the people in the community to feel like we've turned a blind eye to it." And so good for these players. Why shouldn't they? And, of course, the police union said that the players should apologize and they should be disciplined. They said in their statement that we understand that this is just about their First Amendment rights, but cops also have First Amendment rights, too. And he vaguely implying that the cops were going to boycott, I guess, watching the Rams on TV, or I don't know, buying Rams paraphernalia. He said, I'd remind the NFL and their players that it's not the violent thugs burning down buildings that buy their advertisers' products. It's cops and the good people of St. Louis and other NFL towns that do that. So in other words, everyone who is protesting or upset about the shooting of an unarmed black man, another shooting of an unarmed black man, is a thug. Thugs all go out and protest peacefully by raising their hands. We know that.
They just keep revealing their attitudes.
Exactly.
It's incredible.
Exactly. And this is actually fundamentally the problem with the police forces, is that they immediately perceive this entire class of people who would protest as thugs. Do they think that these football players are now thugs as well because they did this? I mean, this is the mentality that is really problematic.
Presumably. And, you know, I just think of all of the kind of, I mean, going into sports is a whole other issue, but there is a lot of sanctimony sometimes about, you know, they got to be better role models and they
exactly.
need to da-da-da-da. And what are they doing? They're speaking out on a relevant issue and using their platform to show basically just like, hey, even though we're in a privileged position in society, we're connected with people who are getting
Absolutely.
Killed.
Absolutely.
That's exactly – that is being a role model or engaging in issues or whatever you want to call it.
Well, really, they should just stick to endorsing things like soup products.
That's really what they mean. They should just do Campbell soup commercials. I thought of the the Olympics photo when I saw that. I mean, it's not at that same level of –
From the
1970s. The Black Power salute. And, you know – that people think of that image, but those guys paid a really heavy price for that.
Yep. Meanwhile, Darren Wilson is leaving the force. It's unclear. I mean, he is claiming that he's resigning because his presence is endangering other officers. He will receive, according to Mayor James Knowles, he will receive no severance pay. And, of course, he's only been there for 3 years. He doesn't have a vested pension. The mayor also announced measures to increase minority presence on the police force, open a dialogue between residents and law enforcement, encourage more officers to live in Ferguson, I guess, by offering $300 a month stipend instead of $100 a month. I don't know. I guess Darren Wilson will probably head on to either Fox News. I mean, how much, honestly, what do you think the chances are that he ends up on Fox News or WorldNet Daily or ends up being a senior fellow at some type of right-wing think tank? There's no way this guy is not going to get his 15 minutes. The NRA hires
him as a
spokesman.
He's
going to
work in right-wing media infrastructure.
Right?
Whatever, I don't know what the specific capacity will be. But it's also
going
to be a
test. This guy's going right on the conservative goal.
He ends up being. Because, you know, like Zimmerman couldn't sustain it because he's so just ridiculous.
Well, this guy, as far as I can tell, has the ability.
More cold, more kind of.
To tell a real good story.
More like a. Yeah, exactly. I think.
And getting back to.
It's going to be a book. That'll be the first thing.
What has been clear, and you know, the testimony that was provided for the grand jury had just come out, I think, the last live show that we did on Tuesday. And it's quite clear. I mean, it seems indisputable at this point that there should have been a trial. And we talked about this on Tuesday, but this idea that the grand jury is simply looking at whether or not there was probable cause for a trial. And we saw McCullough get up there, the district attorney, who did not present any charges to the grand jury, which is extremely rare for the prosecuting attorney to do. And more facts have come out about the witnesses. He went up there and he gave a great speech, not a great speech, an extended speech on why Darren Wilson was, why that it was so clear that there didn't need to be a trial. Some of the data from just some of the breakdowns, this one comes from PBS, about what the witnesses said. More than 50% of the witnesses said that Michael Brown held his hands up when Darren Wilson shot him. More than 50%, 16 out of 29. And in fact, because it's actually just about half, that seems to be a very good indication of why you need a trial. Only 5 witness statements said that Brown reached toward his waist during the confrontation leading up to the Wilson shooting him to death. So presumably there was at least 29 statements, right? At least 29 people saw or would have seen him reaching for his waistline. And remember that when we talk about Tamir Rice, the 12-year-old shot in Cleveland. There's just something about, apparently, black men and boys who they just can't help but to reach for their waist all the time. More than half the witness statements said that Brown was running away from Wilson when the police officer opened fire. Fewer than 1/5 indicated that was not the case. Remember, the bar here is just whether or not there is even a chance, a probability that he could be convicted of a crime. Okay? More than half the witnesses say that he had his hand up. More than half the witnesses say that he was running away as the police officer fired on him. There was an even split among witnesses that said Wilson fired upon Brown after he was already on the ground. There's only six witness statements said that Brown was kneeling when Wilson opened fire on him. More than half the witness statements did not mention whether or not he was kneeling. This is stunning. It's stunning. On top of all this, we now know that the police violated their own protocols over and over again in the wake of the shooting. From the Washington Post, when Ferguson, Missouri police officer Darren Wilson left the scene of the fatal shooting of the unarmed Michael Brown, he returned to the police station unescorted, washed blood off his hands, placed his recently fired pistol into the evidence bag himself. Remember the story about Michael Brown putting his hand on the his gun? Wilson's movements after the shooting were among a number of police actions in the aftermath of Brown's death that the experts said were unusual. Officers who interviewed Wilson immediately after the shooting did not tape their conversations. That's weird. The transcripts also showed that an investigator from the medical examiner's office opted not to take measurements at the crime scene and arrived there believing that what happened between Brown and Wilson was self-explanatory. In the first minutes after a shooting, investigators are trained to have very specific processes. You got to protect the scene, the crime scene, to protect the, to not contaminate the evidence. The shooting suspect is always cordoned off, stripped of his clothing. His weapon is secured so that you can actually get some type of forensic evidence from these things. It's unbelievable what took place after that, that shooting. All of this indicates, at the very least, there should have been a trial. Meanwhile, there is this video. There is a video, I should say, of a 12-year-old boy named Tamir Rice, who is out in front of a bus stop in Cleveland, Ohio. And he is waving around a pellet gun. And apparently he was there for some time. And the video has no sound. Maybe we'll clip it for the YouTube video. But you can see the guy is around there. And apparently there's a guy sitting in the covered bus stop who calls the police. And the guy calls the police, calls 911. He says, there's a guy here with a pistol pointing at everybody. The gun is probably fake, but you know what? He's scaring the crap out of people. I don't know if it's real or not. He's probably a juvenile. Then this guy leaves the park. So you just got a guy who's waving around a gun, which would be terrifying. I mean, I remember that story of the guy going into a park in Georgia. He's got his gun in his holster. He's holding it up in the air. He's telling parents who are throwing, who are protecting their kids at a baseball field, I can carry this gun around here because of Georgia's carry law. And the police came up to him and basically said, hey, try not to be a jerk about it. That's it. So you can see what happens next is the cops come rolling up onto the sidewalk. And according to the police, and again, you cannot hear anything, one of the officers shouted from the car three times to Tamir, show his hands as he approaches the car. The cop gets out of the car and in the same motion, now they pull right up on him. In the same motion, appears to shoot the kid dead. From about 10 feet away. According to police initially, the police said two shots were fired by this officer and that Tamir had reached into his waistband when the police officer shouted the commands. This just seems to be the way that cops react. They must have some type of like learning annex. If you've shot somebody, don't forget waistband. The police then call it into dispatch. Shots fired, male down, black male, maybe 20 years old. Now look. The kid had a toy gun. Cops had every right to be concerned. It seems to me there's no reason why these police couldn't have parked their car 20 feet away, 30 feet away, opened their doors, got out behind their doors or behind their car and say, drop the gun. I mean, I think the kid just, you watch the video, the car comes right in. I think the kid was just in a state of shock. He had no idea what was going on. It's unbelievable. And I'll tell you what makes it even more just crazy. This case of Tamir Rice was shot literally within seconds as the police get up on him. Is this video, and again, the audio is not worth it, but guys at a, say, some type of restaurant, fast food restaurant. I don't know where this takes place.
It doesn't have a location on it that I saw.
Two cops are trying to get him to leave, and he's a big guy. And he's saying, don't cuff me. And he basically wrestles free of the cops. They try and taser him a couple of times, but this goes on for like 15 minutes. Maybe it's not 15 is an exaggeration, but like 5 minutes. They're chasing him all around, shooting tases into him, and he's not moving.
And he slaps them.
He is physically going after
them off of him. He goes on the offense.
It's very hard to believe, based upon what we've seen, certainly over the summer, that a black person in that situation, if that was a black male, that guy would have been shot dead literally minutes before they ultimately subdue this guy. It's crazy. It's crazy. And, of course, Rudy Giuliani has weighed in. There's no question that individual cases have situations that are unjustified, but you've got to put it in its proper context. Why is it happening? Why is it happening more often in the black community? Well, we know why. Because the police have this attitude, not all police, but apparently substantial amount have this attitude of like, we're going to war. We shoot first and ask questions second. Doesn't seem very healthy for society. Certainly not for black males. All right, I want to just touch on what's going on in the Senate, because it was an interesting couple of days and the stories didn't get much attention. There were two things that happened, actually, that got my attention. One was there was a leak of a deal between Harry Reid, still remains as the Senate Majority Leader, and House Republicans on tax breaks for big corporations. I'm not sure what the quid pro quo was here, frankly. It was a $440 billion agreement, which turned out not to be an agreement. But lawmakers would phase out all tax rates for clean energy and wind energy, but would maintain fossil fuel subsidies. Expanded eligibility for the earned income tax credit and the child tax credit would also end in 2017, so you would raise taxes on essentially low-income working families. The proposal would help students pay for college by making permanent the American Permanent Opportunity Tax Credit, which I guess is something of valuable to the middle class. Two-thirds of the package would make permanent tax provisions that are intended to help businesses, including a research and development credit, small business expensing, and a reduction of the S-Corp recognition period for built-in gains tax. It's unbelievable. And apparently the White House got wind of this. They threatened a veto. Harry Reid said the deal was not in any way done, and the whole thing seems to have scuttled, but negotiations are ongoing. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this and what's behind all this. and frankly, where that leak came from. Because somebody didn't like which direction it was going in. Meanwhile, Chuck Schumer, and we could talk about this in the funner hat, but Chuck Schumer went to the National Press Club. I guess he did this the day before Thanksgiving. So he didn't want to make too much news. He just wanted to make news with people like us, essentially. People a little bit more attuned to what's going on in politics. Now, you know Chuck Schumer has been vying for the Senate Majority Leader for quite some time. He and Dick Durbin, supposedly, are rivals for this position. And they've got to be looking at 2016 now. Chuck Schumer came out and said, Democrats must embrace government. It's what we believe in. It's what unites our party. And most importantly, it's the only thing that's going to get the middle class going again. I totally appreciate those sentiments. We must convince the middle class that the only way out of the morass is by embracing a strong and effective government, not demeaning it or running from it. I agree with that as well. We should also say that Chuck Schumer was responsible as the head of the Democratic Policy and Communications Committee for presenting that message, at least in the context of the Senate, which was the only body controlled by the Democrats. But he goes on and makes the case that Democrats should not have tried to tackle health reform or health care reform that early in President Obama's first term, but instead should have done things to help the middle class. Now, what those things are, he doesn't really say. Now, this is the senator who represents Wall Street. And one of the things, it seems to me, the primary thing that we could have done is given principal reduction for homeowners. And I can't imagine that's on Chuck Schumer's list. In fact, it really is striking that he would come out and say something so specific insofar as we shouldn't have pursued health care reform, but we should have pursued other things that I'm not going to tell you what they are because I really am not in a position to actually say what they are. I don't know. I found it very strange. But I just don't understand where he's going from this. I don't think there was any way to avoid 2010. It didn't have to be the drubbing that it was. And I certainly would have liked to seen more rhetoric. And I certainly would have liked to seen a larger stimulus package to begin with. But the other things I would have liked to have seen would have been a more robust regulation of our financial markets. Direct homeowner relief, all things that the investment banks would not have appreciated. A bailout for homeowners instead of one directly to the banks. I don't think Chuck Schumer was out there pounding the pavement for that.
He's like, I was really shocked that as a main point person for the financial services industry in the United States Senate, that I didn't need to be put in a position to kill legislation to help homeowners.
That's right.
That really shows a strategic miscalculation on part of the administration that I didn't need to do that.
When I think of all the wasted energy that I spent on trying to figure out how I would kill proposals that never came up, I feel like I left a lot of effort on the table.
I mean, look, I enjoy meeting with lobbyists from Goldman as much as the next senator who's in the pocket of Goldman. But that said, it was a lot of breakfast for nothing.
So,
other than some good contributions.
I'm not exactly sure what the theory is behind here. But I think a part of it is a way to sort of take some of the momentum out of the Elizabeth Warren wing of the party. Right?
By kind of hugging it, though. He's sort of, he's, yeah, well, by hugging it.
Co-op the rhetoric.
Right.
But if you don't have to offer any proposals,
right,
it becomes much easier. And like I say, he's made sure that Mark Warner is now part of the Senate leadership. Mark Warner nearly lost his election in Virginia because he was so third way. Fascinating. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back in the funner half of the program, we're going to take your phone call, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. We will talk about this GOP staffer who apparently was asked to leave her post after mocking the president's kids for being teenagers. Really is bizarre.
Way to go. Good communications work.
You know, the irony is that as my kids enter into, well, one of them is in their tween year. The other one can't even talk. But the more mocking I do of these kids, of my kids,
right,
the better it is for my professional outlook. She's in the wrong business. All right, we're going to take a break. The number is 646-257-3920. The IM is Majority FM. Or you can IM us through the app. Folks, it's your support that makes this program possible. We need your help. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, if you buy crap from Amazon, what is it? Is it today Cyber Monday? If you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our cyber link, which you can get at majorityreportkickback.com. Majorityreportkickback.com. You click on the Amazon link, you bookmark it, you buy all your Amazon crap through there. You'll notice no difference, but we get a kickback. Thus, majorityreportkickback.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. All right, we'll see you in the better half. 646-257-3920.